anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, and welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. This is Sue, and it is Thanksgiving weekend in the U.S. So because holidays and family and travel and so on can be very time-consuming and make it difficult to record and edit a show, Casey and I have decided to bring you another one of my panels from Dragon Con 2015. So the following audio is from a panel titled Truly Outrageous, Female Heroes of Classic Sci-Fi, on, surprise, the American Sci-Fi Classics track. This is a recurring fan panel, and it is different every year, but always one of the highlights of my Dragon Con. The really special thing about this year's panel, though, is that the one and only Terry Farrell was on the panel. That's right, Jadzia Dax was one person away from me for an hour. It was super exciting. We high-fived, and she gave us all hugs after the panel, so it was pretty awesome. And I think you'll be able to hear the excitement and, in some of our cases, the inability to even. So, aside from the epic amounts of fangirling, we talk about some of our sci-fi role models, our favorite characters, and discuss some of the bigger issues and questions surrounding the representation of women in science fiction. Everyone on the panel introduces themselves, so I won't spend any more time doing that here, but there are also links in the show notes to find more from each of those ladies. So enjoy and happy Thanksgiving!
I have been asked to moderate this, even though I didn't want to. It's under duress.
There was arm twisting involved. It was brutal.
Yes, there was arm twisting. Actual arm twisting.
Little literal.
Me.
Well, you picked on Brit Track.
That's true. That's why. So, going down the panel to introduce, we will start with Gina.
Of course you will.
Yes!
My name's Gina Phillips. I write sometimes for Revolution SF and newlistingsite.com. Kind of on a hiatus right now. I've been focusing on activism on social media. And that's about it. Oh, and Terry Farrell is my new best friend.
Hi, I'm Terry Farrell, and I'm an at-home mom. And most of you probably know me from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I just joined the cast of Star Trek Renegades. Ooh. Due shooting in February. I don't know what my character is yet. Thank you very much. I did ask Michael Westmer to do my makeup, so let's hope that means he'll be bringing back some favorite items to put on me. And I'm happy to be here.
Oh, wow. So it's like, where, how can I follow that?
I don't know.
My name, I'm Tegan. I have a website, justtegan.com. I am responsible for the PowerPoint this morning for the mullet panel. I am also the co-host. It's a long story. I'm also a co-host for the Revolution SF podcast, Rev News. I also appear frequently on their Revcast, and I am so happy to be. This is my, I think it was like second or third time on this panel. I just keep coming back, so, yeah.
You must keep getting 5 stars.
I don't even know, man.
My name is Sue. I am a podcaster and blogger for the Anomaly Podcast, which is all women covering general geek topics. I am also one of the hosts of the Parsec Finalist Women at Warp podcast. That is a feminist Star Trek podcast. So this is really exciting.
for some reason, I can't imagine.
That's awesome. I'm Debbie Begay. I'm New York Times bestselling author. I'm best known for the Wicked series, not the Broadway one, the other one. And I do mysteries, thrillers, dark fantasy, and sci-fi action adventure.
Ooh.
Well, that's 2 Wicked references, 2 panels in a row.
And I am Kate Burton Gillette. I'm an advertising copywriter and blogger and editor at Feminist. And my first hetero girl crush was Tasha Yar from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Nice.
Our panel. So we've done this a few times now. I'm going to throw to the panel with the first question, which you've probably all heard before. Maybe your answers have changed in the years, but who's your favorite heroine of classic sci-fi? We'll start with Tegan because she just looked at me.
Damn it. It's really hard to pick a favorite because there's so many great choices.
Okay. They might even be in the room.
I know.
Well, first things first, I have to acknowledge how much I love Judzia Dax. She was my favorite character on DS9. She may be sitting next to me right now. So. That's. I actually had this.
Levels are rising.
Actually, was when I heard that she was going to be on the panel with me, I was like, "What?" And then I was like, "I have this bookmark that I loved, like when you know that had you know it was a Judzia Dax bookmark, and I had it, but not all of my books and stuff. I have no idea where it is, so I was like, I can't bring it to have her sign it, and I feel so sad. But yeah, so just and once Judzia was no longer on the show, I lost interest in the show.
Well, I mean, as we were
so that happened. aside from my love of Judzia Dax, I'm actually going to give a shout out. I was thinking about this panel last night after being up way too late, and I was thinking about Masters of the Universe and Teela. And who here has actually seen Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren? Anybody?
Yeah, wow.
Wow, yes, okay.
Years ago.
Like, I have, like, a really bizarre love for that movie. It's so great and cheesy and terrible and has Frank Langella as Skeletor. So just, so if you haven't seen it, you really should check it out. But Teela is this, she's not even like a love interest. She just kind of happens to be there and happens to be female and has a great discussion about eating, about people's eating habits. Like, oh my God, they eat animals here? How barbaric. And I'm like,
You never think when you're hungry.
You know, it's, it was just like, they don't really damsel her or anything. I was like, that doesn't happen in the 80s. So, I had to give a shout out to Teela. That happened. So who's next?
100% truth. I was all about Judzia Dax. Like, no, seriously. Badass lady scientist who took nobody's crap, sign me up. But I will also have to admit that for me, Dr. Beverly Crusher came first. And I love her, and I love Gates McFadden to the ends of this earth.
Thank you.
All right. So going that way.
Yep.
I also love Judzia Dax because, and I was going to say that, I swear, but I liked how she was at home in whatever world she was in, you know.
Thank you.
And I loved that about her. And I was thinking about who else I love. You know, I mean, obviously there's like Ripley and Sarah Connor and stuff. But I was thinking of Dr. Lindsay Brigman from The Abyss.
Ooh.
Because there's that great moment where you see the helicopter land and there's all these soldiers and you see all these boots jumping off. And then you see these high heels stepping very just casually off. You're like, ooh, she's a woman to be reckoned with. You know, I always thought she had a great role in that, and it was a really strong female role in a more contemporary setting that you didn't always see. And I thought she did a great job there.
I find it interesting that all three movies and characters you mentioned are Jim Cameron.
I can't help it.
I thought Dax was overrated.
And the knives come out.
Totally tooling. cross my heart, don't hit me. You know, I actually hadn't thought about it because I've never been on this panel before, but I'm going to stick with my best. There's been a lot since then, but Tasha Yar was, I mean, I was, what, 7, 8 years old, and this was my first exposure to a woman in a position of authority, and she wasn't even like a non-tough person. She was a security officer, and it was a big deal, and I got my hair cut like her, and it didn't work out. But, but she was. She was inspirational to me, and so she still holds a place in my heart.
It does influence your hair choices, though. I've been dyeing my hair red since the 7th grade.
Gina?
So, this is an impossible amount of pressure on me now, because if I don't mention Jedzia Dex, I'm going to be a brown nose. I did love Jedzia, by the way. We actually only watched the first two seasons of Deep Space Nine. She was part of my favorite part of the show. I think probably for me, and I'm a little older than a lot of the other women on the panel, is that I think Wonder Woman couldn't tell. But I love the fact that she comes from a culture that can make war but chooses peace. And that's the ethic she brings with her to the rest of the world. And I always thought that, in stories where that's emphasized about her, I thought that was a really important. It wasn't just that, you know, that she was skilled at being a superhero. She was different from most of the male superheroes, who usually would try to beat problems into submission. And that's not really her style. I mean, that's one of the things I loved about the 70s TV show, as cheesy as it could be sometimes, is that they very much brought that part of her, which I appreciated.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. Wonder Woman. And there was a time when I was doing Star Trek. I already got to embody Dax. But we're talking, I'm also, well, we're the same age. So when I was a kid, it was Wonder Woman. And, she just looked amazing anyway. But when I was on Deep Space and it was ending, a lot of fans wanted me to play Wonder Woman. And I thought, that would have been so awesome. And childhood hero, loved the gold lasso. I mean, Linda Carter looked amazing. And she never sweated. And I wish my boobs were that big. Sort of in the sexist era of that time, it still had like this amazing appeal of, she just didn't come off, you know, trashy, yet she just didn't really have a whole lot on. But yeah, I like the heroic, peaceful nature of Wonder Woman.
What do you look for them to be doing it right for a female hero? What separates just pandering to the fanboys versus an actual decent character? And I'll start with you.
I think it seems sort of obvious, character development. I mean, when there is an actual backstory and an arc, and not just this is the person who has her boobs out and she's kicking ass. There's the baby.
And her boobs out and she's kicking ass.
You're good.
So frequently when we talk about a strong female character, what we're talking about is someone who doesn't have a belief structure or anything of any kind. It doesn't have a backstory outside of, something horrible has happened to me, or I don't have a mom. And it's basically strong female as in physical strength. And I think that if you're going to do it right, then there needs to be personality to back it up, and it needs to be physically strong plus. And I don't really even need it to be physically strong plus something good. I mean, it can be physically strong plus full-on evil, but it has to be, it has to have some depth there to go along with other things that also happen.
Going down.
I think that's a good answer. For me, I was thinking about when you were talking about Wonder Woman and how she was wearing very little, but Linda Carter gave that dignity no matter what she was wearing. She was just as dignified wearing the Wonder Woman costume as she was wearing the suit. And I don't know how much of that was just the actress versus the way that the other characters in the show would also treat the character. So, and I think about, you know, there's a lot of, you know, kick tail female heroines who are scantily clad, who aren't, it's either, I don't know if it's the writing is bad, or they're not bringing their own dignity to the character, or the other characters around them aren't respecting them like they should. But it's interesting because for me, I like a strong female heroine who is comfortable with her own sensuality without having to just embody that all the time. And it's funny, I mean, it's not a sci-fi example, but the other one that keeps coming to my mind when I was thinking about Linda Carter is it was Kelly in the Charlie's Angels who did the same thing. Mm-hmm. She was the elegant one. And I mean, they would occasionally put her in the bathing suit and everything, but it was like it never felt like it was gratuitous or they were just trying to show skin. She always brought class to it, which I liked. And I think that's sometimes what people miss out on is, you know, it's like, yeah, you can put them in the skimpy outfit and that's fine. You can have them embrace their sensuality and that's fine, but you have to have a sense of dignity and comfort in their own skin. And I think that's partially the writing, partially the acting, and partially the way the other characters are responding.
I think the definition of strong is where we there are a lot of trappings, right? There's physical strength, but there's so much more than just physical strength. And the character that just popped into my head is Tara on Buffy. Tara is such a strong character, but she's so gentle. And it's just a different kind of character. And I think far too often when we hear strong female character, it means one thing. So doing it right, I mean, basest level is passing the Bechdel test, right? Two women, names, who are named, who talk to each other about something other than a man. You would be surprised how much of our media fails this basic test. But above that, it is about showing the diversity of women. Not all women are moms. Not all women want to be moms. Not all women are physically strong. Not all women are physically weak. We're all different. We're people. There is not just one woman. And far too often in the media, there is just one woman. And that's what needs to stop.
And what, you know, being a woman should be sort of like just a side fact about them as a character. Yeah. They need to be a person first. They need to have their own personal arc. They need to have their own backstory. They need to have, you know, the own way they sound. The own, you know, just they just need to be fully developed. And I don't think that is asking a whole lot, but you'd be surprised. So again, being, you know, to do it right, you need to give, you know, just make sure that they are people, because you have such a wealth of male characters and a wealth of ways of displaying masculinity, but you don't really get that as much with female characters, because they are woman first. And I think that should not always be the case. So yeah, definitely give them their own personness before you even think, you know, that's a female.
As someone who was a female, strong female character.
I was. I'm no longer. Yes. Now I'm a weak character.
What did you bring to, as an actress, bring to the role for Jedzia? Or in general?
In general. Well, I really liked speaking to the dignity that you were talking about. And some of it I do think comes from the actress and how she carries herself. Mm-hmm. It's also a lot to do with the writing. And I feel, especially that when Ira Bear started writing for me in particular as a character, he started to make my character much more interesting and gave me things to do. He called it that he was going to make me more roguish. So it was really that I just got to, there were no, oh, you're a girl, so you can't do that. It's like, well, you know what? You used to hang out with the Cardassians, or the Klingons, so let's see what that would look like. Why don't you try that on for a while? And he said a lot of it had to do with the fact that as he got to know me, he saw that I was a very physical person and not so quiet. yeah. So he added that to it. So I feel that I think I was particularly fortunate to have a wonderful writing staff that paid attention to who I was and helped add some of me into Dax, and at the same time allowed me to still be feminine and myself in that, so that there was a balance between me just being my strong side of myself and my more vulnerable side of myself.
Follow that.
Following what Terry said, I think the biggest watchword for getting it right with female characters is agency, over and over again. You've got to give women in media their own motivations, their own backstory, It has to make sense for as a character and not simply as someone who was slotted into a story to fill the female role. I think a great example that happened recently was on Agent Carter, when they contrasted, you know, Peggy's actual exploits versus the radio from the Captain America radio show that was being broadcast at the time, and it shows the real contrast of how popular media saw Peggy versus how she actually was. And I thought that was a really good example to call up as far as how media often portrays women as being a if not a prize, which sometimes still happens, as being frankly being plot meat. It's like that third X-Men movie. The women in that movie are plot meat. They serve no other purpose except to drive the story forward. There's nothing about them that's particularly interesting, even though those are very interesting characters. And there's no discernible motivations to what they do. They're only there to make sure the plot keeps moving forward. And, you know, Grant Ratner, make of that what you will. But unfortunately, it's not an isolated case. It happens all the time in media. And I think that's one of the things I loved about Agent Carter, was that it sort of skewered that trope at the same time as showing a female character who had very specific ideas about who she was and about what she needed to do. And I wish more women characters had that.
Touching off on the whole strong female character, there's kind of been a back and forth on that terminology lately. Sue, I will toss to you that one. To cover, why is there a debate and what's your opinion on it?
Why is there a debate? Because
what is the debate? Because if people are not aware, there's a debate.
So there's this kind of like internet backlash about why I hate this term, strong female character, and it is because of that definition of strength, of being physical strength. And it's, you know, people have replaced it with other adjectives like well-rounded or well thought out or, you know, having a background. And that's really what it is. I think that I pretty much spoke to that in my answer to the last question, is that strength is different for everybody. There's internal strength, there's physical strength, there's mental strength. And, you know, everybody's strong in some ways and everybody has some weaknesses. And flawed characters are real characters, and that's what we need to see. We don't need to see trophy wives or girlfriends, or we've had enough of that.
Or an angry guy with boobs, as they're sometimes written.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And, you know, there's
that's well, just some, a pretty picture.
Some people in these articles are saying things along the lines, it's really tricky, right? They're saying things along the lines of, well, just write the character and then just cast a woman. And, you know, the obvious example is Ripley. Like, she comes up all the time. But in some ways that can work when you're doing an action film, but the femininity, your womanhood, if you want to use that term, is still a part of you. And men and women are different, but that doesn't mean that either is lesser. That's the thing, right? Does that make sense?
Goodness.
No, actually, I was kind of came to start because we had a hand raised. So I got.
I'm sorry. We have hand raised. Mike, go with the mic. To the mic.
Mike. We had two.
Yeah, there's
well,
two.
With regards to Deep Space Nine being very important to this panel, I was thinking about some opinions. We had two characters from sci-fi that are somewhat certain similarities. One is from one of the rival shows, Ivanova of Babylon 5. Who is, I think, she's a great example because she is strong and she knows martial arts, but she's also a very complex character with her backstory with her mother that she had to basically defiance of her pastor's father to join the academy and basically join the Earth Navy. And the fact that it shares complexity, plus I love her sense of humor. Another one, Honor Harrington, who is from around basically sort of like basically the Horatio Hornblower put into space and made a much more complex character. And I don't know what your take on those two characters are.
I didn't watch B5. I watched DS9.
That actually actually same diff. No. We were a Star Trek family, okay? I was raised on the Next Generation, okay? We went into DS9. Like we didn't stray from our Trek roots. And I will say that my dad loves the Honor Harrington books. There's actually a comic book series out now. They just started the Tales of Honor. The second issue was just released this past week. He really absolutely adores that. They're written by David Weber. I totally recommend them because my dad has fairly decent taste in books.
I love the Ivanova character. I mean, I love B5 and I love DS9. But what was interesting about Ivanova was she was deeply, deeply flawed in several ways. One of them being an inability to express intimacy well. And I think when you contrast her with Jadzia Dax, Jadzia was totally okay with going there, you know, with forming intimate relationships and being comfortable enough in who she was to let other people get close.
Star Trek family, sorry.
Was there another question?
Real quick, what do you see...
Wait for the mic.
Where do you see women going forward, like... But Once Upon a Time comes to mind for me. Where do you see the next generation of strong women becoming the classics?
I'm going to just have to say Imperator Furiosa. Yes. Who here saw Mad Max Fury Road?
Who saw it more than once?
Who saw it within the past week? I saw it 3 times in theaters. No, one of the things that I love about you should see it.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
But one of the things I love about Charlize's performance as Furiosa is she is a stone cold badass. Like, she is amazing. She is very physical, but she also is allowed to be vulnerable. She has this wonderful, heartbreaking moment that's so beautifully shot. She's screaming in agony for, like, her lost childhood, and just everything just went wrong. And she has this, you know, great moment of vulnerability, and the camera stays on her. It focuses on her. And I just want to say, thank goodness for George Miller and his team for giving us this whole movie that is chock full of so many different kinds of women. There's the badass biker chicks that are all like gray-haired older ladies, and you don't see them at all in movies. So actually having a whole group of them, and you're sitting there going, this is amazing. Why do we not have more badass biker chicks like these? So I think going forward, hopefully Hollywood has seen how much that film resonated with the audiences, and allow women, you know, women characters to be people with vulnerabilities and obvious strengths. But yeah, I think going forward, I hope that they take more pages from that book.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring up Once Upon a Time, because it does have fantastically strong female characters, but honestly, at the expense of a lot of the male characters, because all the male characters are weaker and they're under, and they're always looking to the women to make the decision, and it doesn't feel like a partnership, even between the ones that are married or the couples that are in love or whatever. Yeah. And it's getting kind of old for me personally, because I'm like, you know, it doesn't have to be one way or another. And if I think about, like, a great fictional partnership, you know, and everything, I think about Prince Baron and Princess Aura. Those are two incredibly strong personalities that are very, very different, but you see them working together as a couple, because they're at odds sometimes, they're together sometimes, but neither of them has the upper hand over the other, truly.
Can I say also, because we kind of dropped out of Once Upon a Time this season, Sense8. Just go for if you have a choice between one of those two, watch Sense8. That show is amazing. Of the 8 main characters, 4 of them are women. Women are not treated as an afterthought in the show at all. The presence of a strong trans woman is obviously, you know, a big deal to me personally. But all the female characters on that show are just fantastic.
And they do. They are allowed their vulnerabilities as well as their strengths. Yeah.
Even like the physically strong, even the character who has the most physical prowess, Sun. She absolutely has her own motivations. She is not simply there to kick ass and take names. She she has very specific reasons for why she does what she does, and the show works to explore that as fully as possible.
I think it's interesting the way you phrased it as what's there today for the next generation, kind of. Star Trek reference. but not non-genre, like, we can point to Grace and Frankie is amazing. So Orange is the New Black. But for, like, the kids that were my age when DS9 was on, I don't know. Like, we just did a whole hour on Xena. Yes. And Xena, Gabrielle, Kalisto, you've got so many great women in that show, and they're all different, right? Xena did it right. But I don't know what's there now. And even more so with the Star Trek connection, like, Voyager came on right when I was at the age that so many girls leave math and science. I credit B'Elanna Torres for my chaotic theory degree. All right? Because of those characters. Because you had Captain Janeway, a scientist, working with B'Elanna Torres, a scientist, every week, I stayed in the sciences. I didn't realize that until later. But if I hadn't had that encouragement from these characters, who knows what I would have studied. And I don't know what's out there. I don't know what kids 13 to 18 or whatever are watching now. Yeah. I don't know if there is anything.
Yeah, because a lot of the shows these days with a lot of strong female characters are skewed for older audiences. Like even Orphan Black, which has a huge fan following, and rightly so. Amazing. Yeah, Titana Maslany is fantastic.
And finally getting recognition.
And finally getting an Emmy nom. Oh. Yay. But yeah, but that show skews much older because of the subject matter and everything. So there isn't, for the up-and-coming girls who are leaving the STEM fields, there isn't a whole lot out there at the moment.
Can I make an offer, a suggestion? Steven Universe.
Steven Universe is great.
Yes,
it's a first of all, it's fantastic for grown-ups, but it's an amazing kids show.
Steven Universe. I can see the weird looks. It's on Cartoon Network.
the first 35 episodes are on Hulu Plus. If you they have a Cartoon Network channel, and in there you can see the first 35. They're like 11 minutes long each episode. And yet they end up being fully realized stories, and they're like
basic
some of the best
for those who don't know.
And they're like some of the
so the basic plot of Steven Universe is there's this kid named Steven, and he has three maternal figures and a dad. The three maternal figures are essentially aliens. They're gems. And it's about their wacky adventures trying to save the world and the universe, and stuff happens, and some real deep stuff happens, and like heartbreaking stuff happens.
Oh. And there's also a cheeseburger backpack.
Yes, there's also a cheeseburger backpack. It's a really, again, it's one of those shows you really can't define easily.
Just give it a try. They're short episodes.
It's interesting.
I think one thing in favor of, I guess, the development of female characters is that a lot of the things that in the past might have been more cartoony, the sort of going more of the Christopher Nolan way and less of the Tim Burton way, not that I have anything against Tim Burton, but we're getting a lot more realism and depth to the characters. And I think about the show Arrow, which it's not really 13-year-old level, but you are getting a lot more depth to those characters. And so you have, instead of just someone, the Black Canary, and she's going to kick some butt, but she also has these people that she's taking care of and reasons that she's doing things. And for that matter, I think of the character Felicity, who was supposed to be originally a one, two-episode character, and there was just so much demand. People liked her. They liked what was going on with her and wanted to see more of her, and now she's, kind of a necessary leg to the plot, and we've seen in episodes when she's been removed, things kind of collapse. And so she is a person, and she's in a dress, and she's very pretty, but she also has this emotionality and this brain power going on that makes her an essential part of the plot. And I think that's positive looking forward, and I hope to see more characters like that.
One of the ones on TV right now, the one that I love that I think shows a really great female, character and role model is I love Abby on Sleepy Hollow. You know,
Abby Mills.
Abby and her sister, man, they are awesome. And heaven help me, I want Abby and Ichabod to get together so badly because they are so well suited to each other as people. You know, and it's they have such a great partnership that I sit there like, you know, they would probably have a really great marriage at some point if that everything's ever went that way. But I love the fact that they are complete equals. They both have different strengths than each other, and they treat each other with respect. And it's one of the most the best paired male female, you know, couple working together in television that's on right now, I think.
Did you have a personal?
Mike's got a mic
here, and then that gentleman there.
Okay, in regards to what you said about in Once Upon a Time, sometimes it was the female characters seem to get more development at the expense of the male characters. I'm always curious, how would you say we should navigate male and female characters in such a way that we're not just reversing the tropes? Because to give you another good example, my favorite show right now, and someone's probably going to throw something at me for liking this, is Z Nation, which, major spoiler alert, episode 6, the character of Garnett dies very suddenly and really turns out to be a man who was stuffed in a refrigerator because his death is just part of Roberta's story arc as she becomes the leader of the group. So I'm wondering, do you feel that that positive, that trope can now be reversed? Or
I think the trick is that agency and value to the story are not a zero-sum game. That you don't have to give one to one character at the expense of the other characters. It doesn't work that way. You can actually have characters who are equals and who are of equal value to the story, and it does, you don't have to lose anything in the process.
Aren't we all of equal value here right now?
Yeah. Theoretically. Well,
someone just had more tax levels.
And reliance on that trope, that kind of trope, that's a laziness. There. It's, you know, whether it is a man getting fridged or a woman, it's, I cannot come up with any other motivation and backstory for this person. So, let's kill somebody.
Or, can we talk about the trope of fridging in case anyone doesn't know about that?
Yes. Does anyone not know? Raise your hand.
Okay. Fridging me? So, fridge, want me to give the fridge expo? Okay, so, There was a Green Lantern.
Green Lantern comic.
Green Lantern's love interest was killed and stuffed into a refrigerator for the furtherment of his personal man pain. Which became the name of the trope, Woman in the Refrigerator. And if you look back on, I want to say a good 75-80% of female character deaths in movies, it's for fridging purposes. Notable recent example would be Frigga in the Thor: The Dark World, where she arguably could have totally killed Malekith, but we had to kill her so that Thor and Loki would kind of get along. And it is a common, really irritating trope. And again,
Simone started it, if I remember.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Gail Simone. I think she did coin the term.
Yeah, she did coin the term. She had a website. Women in the
Danny Pink is fridged too. Yeah, Danny Pink is fridged.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Frigga was her mother.
Yeah, but still, it's a similar concept.
Concept of someone dying to the furtherment of someone else's character.
Mm. And 99% of the time, it's a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
We might have to backtrack a little bit. But femininity is one of those things that it's a social construct. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to be feminine to be considered a strong female character. And Imperiosa clearly being a favorite.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of wondering what your comments are as far as leaving that behind in favor of, you know, sort of stripping the character down to actions and feelings rather than a perceived, you know, social construct. You know, one of my favorite characters was Carter from Stargate SG-1. She was a blonde, but she was incredibly smart. They didn't sex her up. They didn't, you know, she was in uniform. So, what would your comments be?
Oh, goodness. I'm going to... We were sitting here and I was thinking Emma Peel from the Avengers, not those Avengers, the other ones, the one played by Diana Rigg.
Yes.
Emma Peel
is a fantastic example of a character who can use her femininity and is perfectly comfortable with that aspect of her personality, and it doesn't take away from her agency. It doesn't really take away anything from her. As far as where femininity stands, for example, Agent Carter wears fantastic red lipstick and is a kick-ass woman, and she is perfectly comfortable in her heels and her dresses, and also equally comfortable in combat boots and a jumpsuit. You can have feminine really feminine expressing characters and still be incredibly strong. There is again not a zero sums game. Like there is different examples. I just love Imperator Furiosa because she's amazing.
I think about Tasha Yar.
Yeah.
During this conversation, and specifically that dreaded episode, The Naked Now, because the problem, right, is when you need that societal construct of femininity to feel like a woman. And that's what she's doing. She breaks into Troy's closet and puts on all these soft, flowy clothes and has this speech about she never had this growing up, and so she doesn't really understand her femininity. And, like, what? No. Because the soft, flowy clothes and the pink colors, that's not the problem. The problem is that being the only option.
One of the core assertions of misogyny is that masculinity is inherently superior to femininity. And the thing is, it doesn't matter whether you believe that those are inherent traits or a social construct. Personally, I think there's probably a little bit of both. Misogyny certainly doesn't care. It holds the same either way. And I think part of what happens with female characters is that because there is an internalized thing a lot of us have, that femininity is somehow lesser, inherently lesser, and that the only way for a woman to have strength is to be masculine. And I think that's one of the things that hopefully we can start getting away from in fiction.
I think it's important that we see both, that both of those are represented, because, you know, as you said, regardless of whether it, you know, how much of it is a construct and how much of it is inborn, there are women who definitely, for whatever reason, do identify more with the feminine aspect of things, and then women who identify less. I think if we focus on the ones who can kick ass while wearing lipstick and make that sort of our model of being pretty and also tough, then that sort of neglects the people who, you know, the side of things where we're just tough, don't care about putting on lipstick, but never really get any attention because they're not doing both. And on the other hand, if we act like the masculinity is, you know, preferable to femininity in any way, and to be strong you have to put that feminine side aside, that also is limiting on the other end of things. So I think it's important to have representations of both with equal, you know, equally strong.
Well, and this also kind of goes to that whole idea of having the well-rounded female character, because most women are not all of one thing all the time. I mean, I'm sitting there, you know, when I'm writing, I'm in my sweatpants and, you know, or my pajamas.
All right.
I didn't have to go somewhere, you know, with my hair up and I look a mess and my husband's just like, oh. You know, and I'll be walking, and he's like, "Man, you don't even walk like a girl." And I'm like, "I'm not in the mood to walk like a girl, man.
I walk like a girl because, you know, I am a girl."
You know? And then he's like, "You know, let's go out to dinner." And I'm like, "Am I in the mood to go out to dinner?" "Yes, I'm in the mood to go out to dinner." And suddenly I'll walk down, and he's like, "And she's wearing a ball gown. What happens?" You know? And I'm like, "He's like 2 minutes ago there was nothing girly, and now you're all girly." And I'm like, "That's because I'm a woman and I'm allowed to flip flop like that." But it's true. It's like there's I don't know any woman that's 100% feminine all the time.
Every choice is valid.
And I don't know any woman that's 100% non-feminine all the time. You know, it's a sliding scale depending on our mood, depending on our circumstances, depending on if we're on a date versus if we're at work versus if we're home by ourselves bathing the dog, you know? And so I think part of the problem is you're seeing just one aspect of a character oftentimes in fiction instead of getting the whole picture of the person and how You know, it's kind of like those old commercials that a lot of women loved for the suits that, you know, what a difference a day makes. And you'd see the guy in his day job, and you see the guy in the suit for the evening, you know, wear kind of thing. And there was that understanding that this is both the same guy. And it's, unfortunately, we get oftentimes only see one aspect of the female. So it's like, if she suddenly puts on lipstick, it's like, oh, well, where did that come from? Well, it's not that it came from somewhere. It's that now is an appropriate time to wear lipstick, and she's in the mood to do
purse.
So.
Exactly.
You know, it came from her purse. I love that. Well spoken. So I think that's part of the problem, is we need to be able to allow our characters to not just be one spot on the female femininity spectrum and have to stay there the entire story. Mm-hmm. You know,
can I say what I'm hearing is that people just need to be more well-rounded,
yes.
Or characters need to be flushed out, because you can't say, oh, now because she's female, now I must do this perfect balance of feminine and masculine, and I'm going to measure that out, mm-hmm. because we're all so different. I mean, as people, and sometimes you're feeling underdeveloped in different parts of your personality, right? So you shouldn't have to write a character that's not flawed,
yeah,
because she's having a rough time dealing with the fact that she needs to be maybe stronger. And you know, I guess I didn't think that one all the way through.
Yeah, kind of train of thought just sort of took a slight turn and then went downhill. It's cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
I need food.
I got a Nutrigrain bar. So
female characters, because, for example, the Avengers, the modern Avengers,
yeah.
We didn't have Natasha Romanoff. They'd be nothing but brutes.
Yeah.
The thing I like about Natasha is she could be strong, but as I saw in the latest movie, she could be vulnerable in terms of her love for Bruce Banner. I like that. Also, I like Hope Van Dyne, too. I think she could carry her own without Scott Lang, but she shows that she helps Scott Lang to be better also. And one more character. She's the chief. I don't know what her name is, but she runs the Avengers.
Maria Hill. Where do I even start from there? So
two movies and no Wasp. What the hell?
They are fantastic examples of very interesting characters that writers have made interesting decisions with them. One of the things I will say about Hope is that I am so tired of the perfectly capable and competent, in fact, more capable and competent character having to step to the side so that the schlubbier dude can do it. Because that is what happened in Ant-Man, when Hope could easily have done everything Scott did, probably backwards and in heels. But she couldn't do it because reasons. Because Daddy didn't feel comfortable with having her out and possibly dying, because that would have made him unhappy. Even in the Lego movie, Wildstar was
Wild
another
style.
Wildstyle. Sorry, it's been a long day. Wildstyle,
you see?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, Wildstyle. Wildstyle was easily could easily have done everything, and everything would have still been awesome. But
no,
for
awesome
reasons
was bad.
But yeah, but for reasons, she was unable to do
she
it.
She was not the chosen one.
Because she was not the chosen one, because the chosen one is always a guy.
A bumbling guy,
because that's the everyman that guys can identify with.
I think additionally, when you start dealing with media properties that also have a toy component, because then you see like the sort of the heavy gendering of the marketing that happens. Perfect example is Avengers: Age of Ultron, and the toy with the Quinjet and the motorcycle that comes out in the movie. If you'll recall, Cap loses his shield. Black Widow gets on a motorcycle, drives the motorcycle off of an airplane, and goes out to retrieve his shield and get into the fight. In the toy packaging, Captain America is on the motorcycle.
They took Black Widow out of her own scene.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find.
That would
Black
piss
Widow
me off.
Oh yeah, merchandise is very hard to come by.
Yeah,
compared to the other characters, absolutely.
Yeah, I saw several Avenger toy box sets, and it's always Ultron, Thor, Cap, Hawkeye. Where's Black Widow? Never there. They'll put an Ultron in.
I have a hard time finding leather pants that small.
No, but
It's everything, though. It's not just Avengers. Can we talk about Funko Pop for a second? The Next Generation set, there's random Klingon and Locutus, but no Dr. Crusher?
Yeah, right?
WTF, Funko Pop.
I just bought that set. And I was like, where is Dr. Crusher? And I'm at my local store. And I couldn't believe it. She wasn't even in there.
It was so
right?
Curious.
Was that so weird? But there was like an extra Klingon.
Yeah. Why is there an extra Klingon?
And Picard is in four.
I know there's two Picards
if
and
anyone
extra
plays
Klingon.
Clicks,
yeah.
They did a set for the Batman 66 TV show. They had Bruce Wayne, Dick Grayson, Batman Robin together. They had a number of villains, including Bookworm. Who had his bookcase what? As a weapon? Guess what figure they didn't have? There's no Batwoman. They did both Julie Newmar and Eartha Kitt Catwoman. They did right there, but
no Batgirl.
But no Batgirl. No.
Also, the TNG Pez set. Sometimes, depending on the set you get, sometimes instead of Dr. Crusher, you just get the Enterprise.
You know, that's hateful. I think it's the same guy who had me killed. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
terrible.
She was there.
Yeah.
Hey, when you start seeing this stuff, you can't not see it anymore. That's the hell of it.
So there's a really dark and ugly part of this that you guys might have watched, that you've heard of this show, I don't know. It's on HBO. this rather corpulent fellow writes it, and it has done some pretty awful things to people this last season. Does everyone know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I understand it's a musical chairs.
It's a musical chairs book. Yeah. Game of Thrones. So
the panel on exactly that in Game of Thrones is happening right there,
well,
right
we're
now.
We're not in there.
Just FYI.
My girlfriend's on this panel.
Oh, he has
called out and everything. So, anyway.
He's saying Dax.
What?
So, how do you feel about the sort of vaguely sociopathic message that kind of permeates Game of Thrones? And it isn't just for the male characters; it actually sort of falls out in the female characters as well. How do you feel that that does or does not positively address this issue?
I actually like rage quit the show. No, it wasn't even rage quit as much as it was meh quit. I just couldn't summon up the will to go on. I think it's not just that show. A lot of shows really love torturing their female characters, and again, I think and you're sitting there going, why? What function does this serve to the narrative? Especially the overuse of sexual assault in a lot of shows, not just Game of Thrones, but it is, you know, the threat of sexual assault, the actual, like, it's
Outlander.
Everywhere. Outlander.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, and you're sitting there going, what does this bring to the narrative? Is this just, are you even going to talk about this later? Are you even going to address the emotional fallout from this? I mean, even Xena with Dayhawk and Gabrielle's emotional fallout after the baby issue, you know, she still has some damage and some PTSD from that. But in a lot of shows, you know, we're going to just throw this in there just as shock value, just to give motivations to the other characters to rescue you. Storytelling shorthand without actually addressing how damaging it is, how that affects everyone. It's a terrible thing.
In a lot of these fictional worlds, PTSD and sexual trauma don't seem to actually exist. If you watch Breaking Bad, that show is pretty much 90% about how much PTSD will screw up your life, from top to bottom. And I think a lot of other properties and like shows and even movies could really take a lesson from that, just about how much events really do affect characters. I like a lot of people diss on Iron Man 3. I thought Iron Man 3 was really good in that it dealt with the fact that Tony had pretty severe PTSD after the Battle of New York. Which makes sense because he's the one regular human who is put in the most danger because he has the suit. Mm-hmm. The other regular humans don't do as dangerous stuff as he does.
He flew in outer space. With
To have an interesting classic example would be Red Sonja.
So Red Sonja, you know, basically her primary motivator was the fact that Queen Gedrin had the hots for her and Red Sonja didn't reciprocate, therefore a sexual assault was necessary. While they give that as her primary motivator, they don't necessarily address it as much later on in the movie. In fact, they don't talk about it at all. They go through, like, this happened to her and now she's a badass warrior and we're going to just take that as a given. We don't deal with the emotional fallout of that. We don't even address when she's interacting with Arnold Schwarzenegger's Not Conan, they don't even bring up the possible issues she might have with male characters. It just, you know, they just kind of throw that in there and then just, let's just roll the movie, Sword and Sorcery, let's just have this out and not talk about it.
Well, as Peter David pointed out, talking about the character, this is a woman who is raped.
Yeah.
And then said, no man will ever have me again unless he can beat me in combat. How messed up is that?
I
want to say something about fantasy in general, because I have to admit that I don't watch Game of Thrones or Outlander. And not to make any kind of statement, there's just too much TV. But you hear so often people defending this kind of trope in especially fantasy worlds with historical accuracy. The history of what? Westeros? But like, and you're okay, you want to base it on medieval Europe. You know what? There were non-white people in medieval Europe.
There is that.
You know, first of all, and you take it into a fantasy world. Based on does not mean exact. You're telling me you can imagine dragons and magic and sorcery and that's no problem, but you draw the line at equality?
My issue with what they've been doing with Game of Thrones is it's so commonplace that the characters accept it as being, and it's the danger is desensitizing people to it, you know. And I think it's a subject that we shouldn't really be, you know, keep bringing up over and over and over again, especially, you know, if we're not going to treat it as something, you know, incredibly serious and as, you know, an outlier of human behavior. You know, the fact that they all accept it as normal and this is what's going to happen is just nasty, you know, and it leaves a really bad taste in your mouth and it makes it difficult to enjoy the rest of the show. I mean, it's a weird kind of dichotomy because I would have no problems, you know, seeing the female captives tortured like they torture the men, you know, cut off their hands, rip off their fingernails or whatever. Fine. You know, but there's this weird, oh, we shouldn't hit the girls, but we'll rape them. Yeah. And it's like, how about you beat the crap out of them instead and, you know, give them a little dignity? You know, it's just, I don't know. You know, but it's so, to me, I think it's a very slippery slope because I think it sends a bad message of making this seem like a normal behavior because the characters in this world expect it to be normal and eventually enough people who don't have a problem telling reality from fantasy are going to think it's normal in this world. So.
That lady, and then sadly due time, you, and then you, and then we'll have to wrap up.
Yeah, I guess based on a lot of the things that you guys have been addressing, one of my favorite characters is Dana Scully from The X-Files.
Oh, yeah.
Based on that, she looks girly, and then they show scenes of her where she's hanging out and writing, and she's just in her pajamas, and her hair is up, and she's relaxed, and she's confident in what she is. But I think one of the unfortunate things about Dana Scully is sometimes in the writing that Mulder always has to go save her in the early seasons. That made me so mad, but it sort of touches on a thing where she's mentally strong. She's not a character that's physically strong, but she has a lot of will, she has a lot of knowledge and intelligence, and being in a men's world, she still exudes her femininity, even in a long suit and her kitten heels. She still shows how women can be strong and passionate about the things that make them wake up every day. Or wonder why they're doing things. But I think Dana Scully is definitely still an icon with being so smart with science and pursuing that. And like Beverly Crusher, it's just such... I have red hair too under this.
I get it.
I think the show learned its lesson because later on, Dana mostly rescues Mulder because, frankly, Mulder's a dum-dum.
Yeah. But they're... I mean, jumping really quickly back to the STEM fields thing that I mentioned earlier, there is a legitimate thing that in more women going into the sciences in like the mid to late 90s, and they call it the Scully effect. That's why representation is important.
The people who wrote the computer programs to get the lunar module to the moon and back were women secretaries.
Yep.
But when programming became important, men took over.
Mm-hmm.
The astronauts specifically wanted the woman who did the calculations by hand to say, yes, your orbits are good.
Yep.
That was in the 60s.
There is an amazing photograph of her next to all of the code she wrote that's printed out, and it comes up to her neck. Seriously, Google this. It's amazing.
Earlier you touched on what your favorite heroines are, so my question is, do you have any favorite villains that are considered, like, well-written? At least...
Ooh. So what makes a good female villain, or their favorite female villain?
Favorite or at least well-written. I mean, something with depth.
Ah, something with depth.
Gina.
I'm going to come sit out in the audience.
I would say my guilty pleasure in this regard, because I think a lot of times she's not written very well, is Regina from Once Upon a Time.
Yes.
Because frankly, the eviler she gets, the hotter she gets. I think as far as female character, as far as like women villains that I really enjoy, I always liked Catwoman. I thought, as far as a character when written well, has a very strong sense of her own agency, knows exactly what she wants. Her entire, like, sort of ethical code is based on her own motivations, and it is not for the benefit of anyone she might be in a relationship with. That's kind of a offhand. And like most people who you consider villains, she doesn't think of herself as a villain. Most villains, of course, don't. And I think that she... the worst thing you say about it is she kind of goes with the ethics of convenience frequently. And but the thing is, female characters are often not allowed that. And so it's nice to see it in one line.
I'm going to piggyback on you. Especially Michelle Pfeiffer's version.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I really like that a lot. Because really there are very few people as sexy as Michelle Pfeiffer. And she was really frightening how her purpose was so strong. And she just happened to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. But she, wow.
Oh, the last scene with her, when she rebuffs Bruce Wayne's advances, says, I can't have that life. That's not the life that's not the life I want. So, scratch, go kiss guy with taser.
Ah, goodness. There are so many fantastic villains out there that I love. Like, I loved Rachel Duncan in the early Orphan Black.
Oh,
like, she was so, again, she's so well written and so chilling. Because my favorite kind of villain is, I love the very tightly wound, like, very proper prim villain. I also love scary computers like GLaDOS in the Portal games. One of my life goals is to provide a voice for a scary computer. I do that at my day job. I do scary computer voice at people. I love those very icy, cold, calculating villains. Like, I love the villains that are planning three steps ahead for a game you're not even playing yet. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's one of the reasons I kind of enjoyed Rachel, because she was playing a game that no one else was on yet.
This is hard.
I know.
I really want to like Missy, Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to, because Evil Mary Poppins is amazing. But I'm not sure I can yet. So I guess childhood favorite, I'm gonna say Ursula.
Yes.
Like, not Once Upon a Time Ursula. Ursula.
Yeah.
And
the real,
she's independent. She couldn't care less what anybody else thinks of her. And you know what? She's a big girl. And she's totally cool with that, and she is comfortable. You can tell that she is comfortable in her own skin. And even though she was a villain, you know, 8-year-old me totally identified with Ursula.
Yeah, part of me wanted to
her motives are no more selfish than Ariel's. So I thought that's what Bear's mentioning too.
Yeah.
I love Miss Scarlet from Clue.
Yes.
She's so my hero, man. I don't know why. I just love her. I think she's so awesome, and she's very unapologetic for who she is and what she does, you know, which is great. And the other one that I come back to is I love Sigourney Weaver and almost everything she does, but I thought she made a great villain in Working Girl.
She's yes.
You know, yeah. You're just like, oh, you didn't. You know, I thought she brings a lot of fun and a lot of integrity to everything she does, but her villain in Working Girl, I was just like, oh, yeah, I wanted to slap her.
I thought she was a decent villain in Paul, even, which was a pretty slight role. Even there, she was fantastic.
Or is the overseer at the end of Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Oh,
goodness. Cabin in the Woods. Okay.
Well, I was about to say Catwoman because she's, for the reasons, she's got agency. She has her own motives. She has her own missions. And when she happens to serve good, it's not because she's all, oh, I've suddenly completely reversed myself and decided I want to accomplish something positive. It's because within her own motives and mission, she can also do this other thing that will generally prevent her plan from getting screwed up. And there's so many different interpretations of her. I love the Michelle Pfeiffer version. I loved Anne Hathaway's Catwoman in...
Well, she's also one of the female characters who's gotten generally pretty decent treatment in other media outlets. In fact, oftentimes better than the treatment she's gotten in comics.
Yeah.
And that's very rare as well.
And, you know, don't watch the Disney version. But the witch in Into the Woods, the real Into the Woods with Bernadette Peters that you can get on DVD, that is an amazing villain.
That said, now I say Ursula.
Yeah, and that's, it's like now that you broke the Disney seal, I had to be like, Maleficent, dude, Mistress of All Evil. Just carry on.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ladies of classic sci-fi heroes panel.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the @ Anomaly Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's AnomalyPodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Corr. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at MarionCorr.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Corr. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.